Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
And welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. Rainy day here in New York City, but our spirits have never been higher, Josh Bass. How are you doing?
Gavin, I'm doing very well. I have to say I was a little bit offended by the last episode of the Locked On Nets podcast where you talked with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy, and I felt like I was replaced a little bit.
No, that was very intentional. David was going over a variety of candidates a little over 2 years ago to name the host of Locked On Fantasy, and at the time I anticipated us forming a Nets podcast and said, why don't you go with Josh, who shares a name with a friend of mine, and he was willing to do it. And 2 years later, I finally bore the fruits of that endeavor. So I'm happy
really
to make
know
you jealous.
How to make me feel special.
Yeah, I mean, well, just did you hear his voice? I mean, you have a great voice, but
he has a very good voice, a terrific accent.
Yeah, and the amount of research he does, like, I don't know, do you have projections for everyone, Josh?
I could start. That's gonna make you love me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Do that. Let's. I want PER for Tyler Zeller next week. Speaking of which, the Nets signed Tyler Zeller to a 2-year non-guaranteed deal worth a little over $3.5 million a season. And Josh, fascinatingly enough, this is actually the first free agent outside of camp invites they signed this offseason. Everyone else was acquired via trade. So what's your quick take on that? I personally liked it just because I thought they desperately needed anyone who's played NBA minutes at center before. And I like Zeller a little bit more than Jared Sullinger.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like him more than Jared Sullinger because I'm assuming he's in at least somewhat close to NBA shape.
But you'd be surprised.
Would I be?
Can you
was he
pop-up?
In the basketball tournament? Or just
No, he wasn't, which makes me – I don't take him seriously.
But, I'm so unenthused with Zeller signing. I'd rather just have that roster spot open. I mean, I don't see any way that he's going to come in and make an impact at all. He fell out of favor before that. He's actually a deep rotation player. He has some skills, decent mid-range jump shot. Okay passer, can run the floor pretty well, but he's not any sort of presence on defense, only an okay rebounder. So I'm just there's not a lot to get excited about in this signing for me.
Yeah, I'll throw this out there. The one season where he really got significant minutes, at least since his rookie year in Cleveland, was his age 25 season in Boston. That was 2014-15. Started 59 games in just 21 minutes a night, averaged 10 points, 6 rebounds, shot 55% from the field. And obviously those stats are a little bit hollow. If not, he would have been more productive in the following seasons and probably would have stuck in Boston and actually played a little bit more there. Because as we all know, Amir Johnson wasn't actually or in any real way the answer to their center conundrum. But he's shown that at least for segments of games, he can be pretty productive and pretty efficient. And he at least throughout his career so far, he's been at his best in a high-tempo offense surrounded by shooters, which is exactly the situation the Nets provide him. So I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star this year. I'm not even saying he's necessarily going to make a positive impact. But I just thought there was such a desperate need for someone to share center minutes with Mozgov because after not playing any summer league and looking pretty raw regardless of that, I really don't think Jared Allen's ready. What would your solution at center have been if they had hypothetically kept the roster spot open, just give Mozgov 30 minutes a night?
No, I mean, you can't give Mozgov that much playing time. I don't think he'll get more than 24 minutes a night. There has to be someone better out there than Tyler Zeller, especially when cuts are made. And like you said before, if he can't play over Amir Johnson, who was so bad at the end of last season for the Celtics, then I don't think he should get on the court at all. And he's not really someone who's kind of raw with potential because he's almost, 28 or something like that? And he's had injury problems at all. He's definitely not close to the player he was in that 2014-15 season that you mentioned, where he was decent at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was a big advocate all offseason of the Nets going out there and throwing something at Nerlens Noel, and I know that wasn't really viable after getting Alan Crabb and Damari Carroll, but he's a guy that would have really interested me and someone who kind of bridged the gap to Jared Allen, and it would have just been interesting to make the Mavs pay more than I forgot what the final number was, but it was.
Well, maybe they can get him next season.
Yeah. I guess I guess that's on the table. But yeah, I don't know. My take on it is and was that they desperately just needed a body at that spot. And as far as someone who's a clear fit and I think could contribute a little bit offensively, he's not the worst solution there.
I think going also another part of the NBA brothers, especially big man landscape on the Nets now, Brook Lopez, formerly Mason Plumlee, Jason Collins. I feel like every set of brothers. In the NBA, at least one of them has played on the Nets.
Yeah, and Tyler is the middle talented one of that group. Obviously, Cody in Charlotte was the best prospect coming in and has proven to be a pretty solid NBA player. Luke falling out of the league relatively quickly. Tyler just sneaking into that middle spot, not the shame of the family, not the highlight either. anyways, with that,
much like you and your own family.
Yeah. No, I'm not the our dog Miko is the star. And I'm kind of in the middle ground. We won't mention the third sibling, but
you can tell Nico he's the Cody Zeller.
I tell him that every morning when he wakes up, but he never has quite the reaction that I hope for. Let's get into our second ever mailbag. This one a little bit disappointing. Last time I posted on Reddit, I got too many questions. I think we got 12 or 13 or 14. I think just because I posted it about a week ago and it's a little bit. Of a
about
dead
a week
period.
Ago.
Week
Sorry,
ago.
A
week
stupid.
Ago. No, I appreciate it. We might get sued for using that song, but that's fine. So just because we kind of posted it in the dead of the offseason, we didn't really get quite the response that I was hoping for, but we did have one person ask a question, and then we solicited some friends. I might have made up one myself. With that combination, we get to about six or seven quality questions. The last two, I think we could spend a good chunk of time on. All right, so this one coming from JD763 and also kind of from our friend Marcus, since he asked essentially the same question. I'm going to give JD763 the highlights since Marcus gets a question in later. How do you see the center minutes being dispersed with Tyler Zeller now on the team? How many center minutes will go to Allen, AC, Booker now? Josh, first crack at it.
So I think that Kenny Atkinson is going to be fairly conservative with Mozgov's minutes. He's really the only true center on the team that can play at least 20 minutes a game and not be a complete disaster. And he's had some injury problems in the past. He's someone that's never been in great shape, never played more than 25 minutes a game for a season. So I think they're going to want to be a little bit conservative with his minutes. So let's say maybe 24 to him, 12 or 15 to Jared Allen starting the year. And then I would think the rest would go to a combination of Trevor Booker and Quincy Acey, just playing a few minute spurts at center at a time. And then if there are injuries and maybe Tyler Zeller doesn't press, then he would break into the rotation, but I don't see him playing very much to start the year.
Really? I would put Zeller in there ahead of AC. I think the order in my mind is I'd go Mozgov and then Booker playing kind of small ball five. You watched more Nets than I did last year. You would know how viable that is defensively. Allen, a guy who I think in the second half of the year kind of takes over as the third guy in that rotation, but at least for the time being is kind of out of it. And then, I don't know, I just think Zeller's positive impact on offense outweighs what AC could do on defense. Josh, if you want to make a case for him, I haven't watched the guy in a couple of years, but I just remember him, I think, on the Knicks being pretty terrible and not someone who really struck me as an NBA player. So what's your argument for him?
No, I love AC. He came to the Nets last year and was on fire from three. He was over 50% for most of his tenure with the Nets. I think ended at 43% from three on 83 attempts. So obviously not a lot of volume there, but he can at least credibly stretch the floor. He really competes on defense. So Kenny Atkinson loves to have at least four three-point shooters on the floor at most times, and they worked last year because Brook Lopez was able to shoot the three at the center position, which allowed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to play alongside him. But if you don't have that shooting center there, and until I see Timofey Mozgov actually make threes, I don't care what they're saying about him. I need to see him make it in a game setting. So I think that AC, and even Booker also, because he can at least credibly stand out on the three-point line and make things happen, I think they're going to get some more playing time than people think to start, because it will open up the floor a little bit for the guards.
Yeah, I don't mind Zeller in kind of a small ball lineup. Let's just say you threw him out there with Lynn, Russell, Crabb, and RHJ. I know that would be probably the worst defense in the league by country mile, but that team running around, shooting a lot of threes, Zeller rolling down the middle and finishing, I don't know, I think it could be aesthetically pretty pleasing. And again, as we say time and time again, in a net season without a lot of stakes outside of developing the guys they currently have, I wouldn't mind watching that. All right, let's move on to the next question from super agent and friend of the show, Chase Klein. Who averages more assists this year, Jeremy Lin or D'Angelo Russell? Who averages more points? I had Jeremy Lin for both on these. Josh, you agree?
I definitely agree with Lin for assists. I think he averaged a little bit more per game last year and much less playing time than D'Angelo Russell did when Russell kind of had the ball a lot for that Lakers team. And obviously Kenny Atkinson's offense is a little more egalitarian, share the ball, and Lin was able to thrive in that. And then points, it's a toss-up. I think Russell's going to get a lot of opportunity to score, and I could see him taking the reins a lot. Lin, we'll see how much playing time he gets. I think that he could lose a few minutes to Allen Crabbe and D'Angelo Russell just to see what the Nets have in those guys. But I would definitely go for Lin in assists. I think that's a lock.
All right, yeah, my take on it is kind of, I think Lin's going to be the guy playing on the ball a little bit more. I know he's developed quite a bit as a shooter in recent years, and that makes it viable that they kind of take turns. But just because of the fact that he has a year in a system, he's a more developed guy at this point. And I think more importantly, he's better at breaking down the defense than D'Angelo Russell is. I really see Jeremy Lin as the fulcrum of this offense, and I referenced it time and time again during that last fantasy podcast with Josh Lloyd. But Lin, per 36 last year, 21 points, 7.5 assists, 5.5 rebounds a game. So you put the ball in that guy's hands, he's shown he could put up numbers and relatively efficiently at that, shooting 44% from the field, 37% from 3-point range. So I'm all in on Jeremy Lin having a breakout season. I think, yeah, D'Angelo Russell is the Robin to his Batman. And yeah, I think
it's a fair point, yeah, though, because sorry to cut you off, but Kenny Atkinson and Jeremy Lin do have that special relationship, and Jeremy Lin came to this team because he wanted to play under Kenny Atkinson. He could have gotten a role somewhere else where maybe he wouldn't have started, but he would have been a key contributor for a good team. But Kenny Atkinson is his guy, and even though that D'Angelo Russell is on the team now, that was Sean Marks' acquisition, and Kenny Atkinson is going to put D'Lo in a great situation to succeed. But at the same time, his guy is Jeremy Lin, and that's who he trusts with the game on the line and who's probably going to be running a lot of point guard.
All right, next one is probably, you know what, I'm going to take out any qualifiers. Far and away the most crucial question we have on this list, coming from Kaylee Nassif, new to the Washington, D.C. area. Where does Josh Bass, our own, get his eyebrows done? If anyone wants to see just how impressive they are, you could throw Josh a follow at JMBass_ on Twitter. Or, you know, you don't even have to follow him. You can just get to the page and you can check out his profile picture. Josh, that's a big-time question. I've wondered myself quite a bit. What's the answer?
Where do I get my eyebrows done, in when I was in D.C. or when I'm
no
here?
No, just I think just in general.
In
what's,
general,
what's your spot?
You know, my the guy who cuts my hair, he also, I ask him every so often to clip my eyebrows a little bit, but they're very thick, they're very bushy.
Oh, this is great, because I've for years asked you where you go to get your hair cut and you can never tell me, but now that you're on the show, you have to say it. Where do you go to get your hair cut?
You know, my guy is very busy, so. And it's very hard for me to get an appointment. For years, I've never wanted to tell you because I don't want to make it even harder. And our schedules are very similar. So, you know what?
Really?
Maybe I'll tell you off the air.
Okay. All right. I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast, because he's probably furious at you right now. Is he that busy? He doesn't want new people?
He's very busy.
Okay. All right.
He's so many different jobs.
Oh, yeah. He does eyebrows and hair.
Trades. Game of Thrones guy also.
He's a butcher on the side. Yeah, all right. Okay. All right, I'll take your word for it. Okay. Back to basketball. the Nets, this one comes from yours truly, because I thought it leads nicely into our final question. If the Nets hypothetically had their pick next season, we saw the Ringer put out their way too early 2018 mock draft, and obviously we haven't even seen most of these guys play a college season yet. But who would be your guy if the Nets had their pick and potentially got the number one spot and could take anyone?
I think I would probably have to go with Marvin Bagley. I think that Luka Doncic and guys like Michael Porter Jr. are tremendous players, but the Nets have a glaring need for any sort of talented big men. So if you combine Bagley with guys like Lynn, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, and if those guys can grow into roles that the Nets expect them to grow into, I think you would have a really good team. And I think that the need for some of those perimeter guys like Doncic, who's obviously a phenom, and you can't go wrong with any of them, I think that there's a little more need at the big man spot. What about you?
Yeah, well, Josh, you know that I consider myself the furthest thing from a Nets fan, but it honestly, and this is as true as can be, it breaks my heart that the Nets don't have their pick this year, because I was just thinking about how all these different guys could potentially fit in. Really, anyone in the top five, which is, I know you're a little bit higher on them next season than I am, a spot they could still very well end up in, and I just feel bad that they're missing out on this crop. I'm going to go with Luka Doncic. And I see your point that there's a need for a talented big there, but I think Jared Allen can potentially start to fill that. And while guys like Bagley and DeAndre Ayton might be or almost definitely are better versions of him, they kind of filled that archetype of that athletic rim runner. And I know Bagley and Ayton can do some other stuff too, but they kind of at least they hope they got that guy last offseason. So I'm going to go with Doncic. I'm a big subscriber to Kevin O'Connor's theory, and it seems like every NBA team's theory, that you can't have too many talented wing players. And I think Doncic, if you're building a player for what the Nets want to get done on offense, he's going to look a lot like Doncic, a super skilled, super athletic, extremely strong passer, passing forward, and a guy who can be the fulcrum of your offense at that wing spot. And if you look at Jeremy Lin, obviously great right now, probably not going to be on the Nets when they're a contender. So I think Doncic fits in perfectly with that kind of trajectory, and he would be the fulcrum of that team. And then you have him, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert. Suddenly you have a lot of skilled guys on that wing, a lot of guys who can succeed in basically every aspect of offense. I think you have a really fun team. I think he's the perfect fit.
Yeah, it's making me really sad that we're talking about this, Gavin.
All right. So from something that bums you out to something that bums me out, Marcus Barahal wants to know what grinds my gears, because we always talk about what grinds Josh's gears.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, I couldn't really – I don't know. I'm generally like a pretty amicable person. I don't really get angry over that much. I feel like I'm probably missing something glaring that I complain to you and Marcus about that I'm just not thinking of.
Yeah, but let me give a little background on Gavin.
Sure.
For those who have not met him in person. So he is – probably the most easygoing person I know, extremely happy-go-lucky. The one thing that I can think of that grinds your gears, though, is anything to do with, anything when people don't consider animals' rights.
Oh, you're that's true.
PETA person.
That's a great one. Well, not, I don't know. PETA has a lot of issues, so I'm not on here to be – they do some good stuff, too. But I'm not on here to be a PETA stan. But, yeah, just in general, that's a real one. I don't want to get real with this. But, yeah, that makes me, like – extremely upset, and like I don't understand people who don't have like that level of empathy that like to stand up for like an animal or creature, I guess, that can't really do it for themselves and instead take advantage of that. That disgusts me more than pretty much anything else in the world. On a less serious note, this is something that my dad
care about animal rights more than human rights, I would say. You're very
that's not true. That's a false accusation leveled by the fake news media. Marcus Barahal, who asked this question. Yeah, I wouldn't say that's true. I would say I'm an empathetic person who cares about all, and that definitely paints me in a more positive light than what you're trying to portray right now. Something my dad pointed out recently that I never realized pissed me off, but now I kind of do it. It's a bigger issue when I was based in Phoenix than here, because in New York I think everyone gets it. But one thing that really annoys me is if I'm in like a tight hallway or like a crowded subway, it's when people are walking slowly and having a loud conversation. Like that's not even necessarily part of it, but I always associate those people with the people who also walk slowly and don't let me get by them when I'm like in a rush to get somewhere. And that's obviously, it's totally fine if it's a wide open street. You're welcome to go at your pace. But when you're in a tight area, if you're going to go that slowly, at least have the consideration to let those of us with longer limbs, Josh, you're in that category as well, to kind of skirt by you.
Yes, you heard it, folks. If you see Gavin on the street, do not walk slowly.
No, you can interrupt me. You can talk. I'd love to talk. But yeah, just don't walk slowly directly in front of me while doing it. That's one of the few things that'll make me angry. All right. Yeah, so that's what grinds my gears. Josh, just because we're here, do you want to save yours for the end of the episode?
Yeah, I'm going to save mine and okay. Also think of it while while we continue to podcast.
Yeah, I always throw it at you, and I kind of expect at some point you won't come up with anything. But you're such a crotchety individual. You always seem to have something really good up your sleeve. Even when you have to improvise.
Call me the Larry David of 22-year-olds.
Yeah, it's a great title. Something we should all strive for. All right, so this is an awesome question from our friend Jeremy Caplet that we wanted to fit into our first mailbag, but it kind of we actually got questions for that one, so we didn't really have time to. But this is one that we could probably devote a whole episode to. I just want to dip a toe into this conversation right now, but Jeremy asks, what should the Nets' team-building strategy be following this season? Should they tank in their first year with a pick and try to get a superstar to pair with D'Lo and the young role players? He gives Karis and RHJ as examples. Or use their cap space and location to try and immediately become competitive again in a weak Eastern Conference? Josh, what's your take on that one?
I think it depends how this season goes, and I hate to kind of give that cop-out of an answer, but if D'Angelo Russell can take a step up with his efficiency and with his distributing, and Caris LeVert shows that he can be a serious piece moving forward as a quality starter, I think you have two building blocks there where you might not necessarily be able to tank if you want to, if those guys show progress on a natural curve. So I think it might make sense to try to get some restricted free agents or guys that still have room to grow to pair with Caris and RHJ and D'Angelo Russell. But also if those guys really don't pan out and don't take a step up, I think that it makes a lot of sense to tank and then try to acquire that superstar via the draft.
Yeah, I'm generally with you. To me, when I look at this question, the fulcrum of this conversation is Jeremy Lin, and I know essentially any non-Nets fan who listens to this podcast will think I'm kind of blowing smoke up his ass or like overrating him, but I don't know. To me, he's the difference between this team being pretty good as they were, or not pretty good, but pretty close to average, just below average as they were after the All-Star break last year, to being one of the three or four worst teams in the league. So it really highly depends on if they keep him through the end of this season, if they keep him through the end of next season. My recommendation would be to kind of strike a middle path, let the current group gel, kind of as you said, see what you have this season. And then if you can get a really good asset for Jeremy Lin, maybe a first-round pick or a top 20 pick, ideally, if you're going to trade someone as good as I think he can be. And then I think tanking will kind of come naturally at that point, because even if D'Angelo Russell, even if Caris LeVert, they both take steps forward, you still have a team that's not the worst in the Eastern Conference, but is probably one of the six or seven worst in the NBA. And the Nets, after the Allen Crabbe trade, they don't have like a boatload of cap room. Obviously, that would change a lot if they trade Lin, but I think they only have about $17, $18 million next season, if I'm getting my figures right. And then it's the year after that, they have essentially as much as they want. So I'm a big fan of the strategy of letting these guys develop, grow together for 2 years, and ideally adding a really valuable piece in that 2019 draft. Again, it really sucks that they missed out on two drafts in a row in 17 and 18 that look like they have a ton of frontline talent. And the Nets could have theoretically added two All-Stars, not to rub salt in that particular wound. But I think they really do need one more guy. So I lean closer to tanking, but I don't think they have to do anything extreme to make that play out. It's not like they have to trade one of their young pieces to be worse. I think as long as Lin isn't on the team, they can get that done all on their own.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And even I think earlier in the offseason, I was higher on the team's prospects for this coming season than I am right now, but I've kind of soured on that a little bit. And I think even with Lin, they're going to have, they could easily have a bottom five pick.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that was a big argument between us. And it's kind of funny because I kind of came around to your way of thinking, and I know Ryan Rucco came on the podcast, and he was pretty optimistic about the team. And now we're kind of going opposite directions because I was getting more and more like, oh, you know what, I don't really think the Nets are going to make the playoffs, but I think Josh is right where they're not going to be in that area. But yeah, the more I look at it, the more I kind of lean towards my original way of thinking. I think they're probably somewhere around 6, 7, or 8 just because the bottom of that Eastern Conference is truly pretty atrocious. All right, final note for this podcast, that's it On the mailbag front, again, we'll do another one next month, probably right after the season kicks off. So I'm excited for a lot of overreactions in that first one. But the Nets losing money. They're one of nine NBA teams after revenue sharing, according to an ESPN report by Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe, to lose money. They actually lost the second most money of any team in the NBA. I think only Detroit was behind them. They lost $44 million. Now, that doesn't take into account money the Barclays Center makes from other events, so they might be doing just fine or close to it. Obviously, Mikhail Prokhorov up there amongst the richest owners in the league, so maybe it's not a massive hit to him. But Josh, what was your first reaction after hearing that?
That's a shame, but it's hard to feel bad for these people.
Yeah.
I think that, obviously, the NBA does have a ways to go in terms of making sure that profit or that revenue sharing is fair for all teams, or they need to figure out something with that, because having half the league lose money by one accounting metric is not good. And it's also not good for PR, and the NBA is a real opportunity to kind of seize a lot of the American sports market. And I think it's doing a great job of that, especially while people have a lot of problems with what's going on in the NFL. So I think that the NBA is rising in popularity. I think they just need to find a way to harness that. And the Nets, listen, they haven't been good for a few years. They don't really have a lot of exciting players, even though Jeremy Lin does have a very passionate fan base that comes along with him. It's not enough to make up for ticket sales, concessions, jersey sales, all that sort of thing. And you have to hope that when the team does get better, the money will come in.
Yeah, I'll throw this out there, and to the Nets' credit, they had every excuse not to spend a ton of money this offseason, just because you don't want vets in front of those young guys. And as we say again and again and again, nothing they really do this year outside of develop those young guys, whether they're pretty solid or whether they're terrible, really matters. So, again, they had every reason not to spend money this offseason. And yet, Mikhail Prokhorov and that ownership group, to their credit, they let Sean Marks do what he's tasked with doing and take some risks to try and turn this team around and get someone like Alan Crabb, who's grossly overpaid for the amount of production he's shown so far, but has some real upside, and they're willing to pay that money, willing to get close to the salary cap, even for a team that in all likelihood won't make the playoffs. So that's pretty impressive when you look at other teams like Memphis and Detroit, who were also losing a lot of money, who really did cut back spending, and in Memphis's case, didn't really acquire a free agent when they clearly need one more guy to remain competitive. Or in Detroit's case, they let someone like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope go, who's not by any shakes a great player, but is someone that was pretty valuable to that organization and someone for a team that wasn't that good. Excuse me. It really hurts for them to lose a young piece. So the Nets refuse to do that. So that's something that's absolutely in their favor. Anyways, Josh, unless you have a final comment on that, I am ready for what grinds your gears.
Okay. Didn't really think of anything good. I don't know. What does grind my gears? Okay. Out of the last two times I went to Chipotle, they just put sour cream on without me asking.
I would lose my mind. That would be that.
Oh, is it okay? And I looked at them. I was just like, I really do not like sour cream. I don't understand it. I don't know why they think I'm like cheese and guac, and they're like sour cream.
Yeah.
But that's all. I don't know. I can't give you anything better today, you know?
Yeah, no. That's an excellent one, because I hate sour cream, so I would freak out. Can we just talk about, because sour cream in general grinds my gears. What part of that name is appealing to anyone? Sour cream? Are you kidding me? And like a burrito is like, I don't know. This might be just like me being a snowflake, but like a burrito is like already going to destroy your stomach. You want to add something called sour cream to that equation? That's BS. I don't get
it. A snowflake, but I do agree with you.
I don't get that. I don't get the appeal at all. The one thing I'll say is at those burrito places, Chipotle, El Diablito, which I think we both highly recommend, being another example of that, you have to be really, really quick, because especially during a lunch rush, those people are working their asses off, and they're trying so fast to get to 30 people on a line that probably goes on for an hour like that, where they're constantly having a new customer second after second after second. So at a certain point, I could see it just becoming reaction to try and put everything in and move on to the next burrito and start anticipating customers' needs. So I think, Josh, I don't know if you committed any faults in these exchanges, but I think it's on the customer to be extremely fast.
Ordering to get.
What'd you say?
I said I have terrific ordering etiquette.
Okay, good. All right.
Actually, it is insane how these fast casual workers do it. Like, you're working, like, so much, so, like, furiously for an hour and a half, and then the rest of the day, you're barely doing anything. It's, like, going through the motions.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. One place that's a noted exception to that is the Chipotle on 82nd Street. They are leisurely in their pace. But in their defense, they have, like, two people working there, when most Chipotles have, like, four or five, it seems like. But I don't want to take shots at people making minimum wage, so I'm good closing it out there if you are.
Yeah, we will be starting our new podcast, Locked On Chipotle.
Locked On Burrito. I honestly think that would blow up if we were traveling around the country eating burritos. You know what? I'll edit this part out, and so no one steals it, and we can talk about it. Once you learn how to drive, that's a reasonable goal. All right. For Josh, I am Gavin Shaw. Check out the entirety of the Locked On Podcast Network. Cannot emphasize that enough. With the season starting up, this is the best time, the best place to get all your NBA news for whatever. I know everyone has a second team. Like, I'm a Knicks fan first. I like the Suns a lot because I went to school there for 4 years. I love Steve Nash growing up. I love the way the Spurs play, and now I'm becoming kind of a little bit of a closeted Nets fan. I'll admit it. I know everyone listening to this podcast has a second or third team, and you always okay. Well, Josh
I hate the concept of a second.
Josh is a monotheist of basketball fandom, but most people have a second and third team. And I know with me, like, I've always wanted to make that leap, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what would happen if I got, like, really into, like, the Thunder or something, and just listen to every podcast on the Thunder for a year. And there's so many storylines
of sports fandom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's two at a time always. There's so many fun storylines. There's so many fun players. It really is endless. So why don't you go ahead and subscribe to another fun Locked On NBA podcast today. Again, they are available for every team. And just in case you didn't get it quite enough with that last podcast I posted, you got to hear just how excellent Josh Lloyd is in his role at Locked On Fantasy. So if you want to win your fantasy basketball league this year, tune into that. Obviously, with the NFL getting started, there is one for every NFL team as well. So you can follow Locked On Jets, Locked On Giants. I'm sure everyone listening is a fan of one of those two teams, even though they're both pretty awful. So get the news, and you get someone to complain with, so that's pretty nice. That wraps up this episode of Locked On Nets. We will be back next week.